My name is Holger Zimmer und ich habe einen Zungenbrecher, I got a tongue twister for you in German. Acht alte Ameisen aßen am Abend Ananas. Which just basically means, very sweetly, eight aged ants were eating pineapple in the evening. Acht alte Ameisen aßen am Abend Ananas.
Iceland is a geothermal wonderland, benefiting from the clash of tectonic plates between North America and Europe. It soared in popularity in recent years and gives you a chance to see Mother Nature at work in new lava fissures, glaciers on the move, and a windswept landscape that just might get you to believe in elves. Tour guide Yorick Harker lives in one of England's most scenic counties in the Lake District, but he's become acquainted with the backcountry of Iceland as his favorite place to really escape into nature under the midnight sun. He joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves with tips for enjoying the wilds of Iceland.
Hi, thanks so much.
So when you think about Iceland, you think about it's so trendy, but you're really focusing on something far away from the crowds. Tell us about that other side of Iceland.
I've been traveling there for 20 years, and it used to be just 30,000 people per year would visit. Now I think 2 million. Once I finish guiding, I will admit I have to escape and just hit the wilderness. As a European, for me, it's our wilderness. I know America, Canada, it's a different scale. One minute, you're in Reykjavik, ultra-modern city. Half an hour, you've left the city, you've maybe just come from the Apple store, and then half an hour, you're on the moon in a desert, in a black sand desert. And that, to me, I mean...
It's like two different worlds. So you're saying there's... It used to be 30,000 people a year.
Sure.
Now a couple million people visit Iceland.
For sure.
Now what's the... I mean, the population of Iceland is remarkably small.
Yes. It's about 360,000. There's been a large influx of people from Europe working there in recent years. About 330,000 is the population of the Icelanders.
So well under half a million Icelanders.
Oh, yeah. And so many, 270,000 or so in this small corner around Reykjavik.
Between the airport and Reykjavik.
Correct.
All right. So really, it's remarkably small, and it doesn't have much of an infrastructure. There's one main road around the island.
Correct.
There's one big city, and that's really it.
It really is.
And we all go to the famous Blue Lagoon, and we all go on the Golden Circle, and we all, you know, see the big Lutheran church in Reykjavik, and that's all great. But you, as a guide, when you're on your own, you just make for
the vast,
is it mostly the interior?
Yeah, they're known as the Highlands, the Central Highlands.
Right.
But it's not high mountains because geologically the island is separating, it's opening. So it's a gentle plateau, but it's unique in that you have these amazing volcanoes, but with glaciers on top.
And the island is like, there's one paved road that circles the island. Just give me the lay of the land from a pavement point of view. What is there?
Sure. You have, it's correct, it's a circle. If we're ignoring this bit that stems out at the top, the Northwest Fjord, so if you ignore that, it is like a circle. It's the road one, completed only in 1974. Some parts are still mud roads, even on the road one.
Huh.
And then outside of that, we tend to call them mountain roads. It's got an F prefix.
F roads.
Yeah.
And these are generally gravel, unpaved.
Correct. They're unpaved. They're starting to do more and more as the demand for tourism grows. Now tourism's the number one industry.
You know, what I was struck by, Yorick, is driving on Highway 1 or Road 1.
Yeah.
Every time you did a little turn off, there's a pull off, a little rest area where you have a beautiful map and a very detailed map of where are the farms and where are the restaurants and where are the sites on this little road that branches off the big circle road. So you really sort of know what your options are as soon as you leave that Highway 1.
I've always found that the Icelanders do things very well with detail. And one thing I would really, really stress, before you do go out, use the website, the traffic website.
Is that the safe.is?
That's a good one there. You can log your details and it will take your position. It will hold five positions in the computer. So that if anything happens, then the rescue team, you just press one button as an app and they will know your GPS system. But it's called road.is.
IS for Iceland.
Correct. It breaks the country up, I think, into 9 divisions. And it will give you so much information, the current weather. It will give you how many people have been on that road in 24 hours, in the last hour. And the most important thing for me in Iceland, it's the wind. It's obviously the name, ice. People think cold. Average temperatures aren't too bad, especially on the south coast, close to the ocean. The wind is the killer. So on the road, you will obviously, as you said, get those information signs. You'll get wind speed. And it's going to be in meters per second.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Jorik Harker. And Jorik is a guide in Iceland, and his passion is getting away from the people into the interior of that remote and just jaw-droppingly beautiful island. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and you can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. And Lisa from Glendale, Illinois, emailed us, and Lisa writes, "We were in Iceland in January, and the wind gusts were over 90 miles an hour, resulting in cancellations of many of our excursions." They were there in January. Is wind more of a problem in the winter, or is it just something all year long?
I would say all year long. More so it's happening, obviously, with the changes in the globe. May, they're starting to get a lot of more anticyclones, and it is a problem. It doesn't snow so much, but one big difficulty whilst traveling is the spindrift. Because there are so few trees, very few fences, no stone walls really, and so the wind picks up that snow, and whilst you're driving, it's very disorientating.
You know, you've mentioned the wind, Jorik, and this is so interesting because when I landed in Iceland last time at the airport, they said, and we highly recommend sand damage insurance on your car. I thought, well, what's that? I just thought they're trying to, you know, hit me up with some bogus extra expense. But no, you get sandstorms where it can ruin the surface of the car. And if you don't have insurance, it can be expensive.
Yes. When you get to the airport, sometimes you think it's an expensive country, trying to minimize the costs. If you're going to the northwest, not a big problem. But if you're on the south coast, that's the sand area.
Yeah.
And I would kind of advise it because I have been caught in a sandstorm and it's at first,
because you might leave your car at the ferry dock there to go to the Westman Islands, come back 2 days later, and your car is a mess.
Amazing.
And in fact, I was on the Westman Islands, and everybody says, watch out for nature. Iceland's serious. You can really hurt yourself. And yeah. And I was walking on this breakwater, you know, getting pictures of the harbor. It was so beautiful. The light is so beautiful. And I'm walking on these giant rocks on a breakwater. I nearly got blown right into the sea. A gust came up. And, you know, I can hold my own.
Yes.
And I've never had that experience before, but it happened in Iceland. So I guess you hear a lot of people that really know nature say, take the safety warnings seriously.
Respect that land. It will teach you a lesson, and it won't take you prisoner. It'll just flick you off the map. I've learned the hard way a lot in Iceland. It's taught me a lot of lessons. And the simple one, always listen to the locals. They're very friendly. They're very approachable. Their English standard is, I'm afraid, better than mine. They have a great humor, and just listen to the locals. It's a thing I've learned, and unfortunately a lot of new tourists to the country don't.
And then there are those websites, and people will find them when they're driving, but you see these road safety stops everywhere, and you see references to websites that tell you what's the weather and what to be careful of and so on. Take care of that. Tour guide and outdoorsman Jorik Harker is helping us plan for a little time alone with nature in the backcountry interior of Iceland right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Today's interview was recorded before the volcanic eruptions a few kilometers north of Grindavik. It's closed hiking trails near that village in the southwest corner of the island. But authorities assure us that the airport and highway on the Reykjanesk Peninsula have not been impacted. Nicole in Victoria, British Columbia, has a question about wilderness sports in Iceland. Hey, Nicole.
Yes, I'm interested in exploring Iceland someday, and I'm wondering if you have thoughts on renting equipment and gear once we're there, or is it always better to bring our own from home?
So I guess the big question is, if you're going to do the typical tourist stuff, you'll have, you know, the big city stuff that you'd expect to have. But with Jorik, we're talking about getting off into the countryside, and that's a great question, Jorik.
There's a company that I use, and very nice people. It's based in the center of Reykjavik and in a very typical Icelandic fashion, very honest system. So you can turn up, especially in the off season. They will give you a PIN code and you get to their door, you just put it in and all the kit will be in there and it'll be your name, your number. And if you, for example, I always find it very difficult when you've landed, you might have a stove. You can't travel with gas, flammable objects in your bag. It's always a hard thing to get hold of. So they will have gas for you there, camping gas. They'll have water, they'll have sleeping bags, tents, poles, you name it. And also, which is very good, they'll have like the spot devices, so GPS if for rescue.
So let me understand this, Jorik.
You mean Wi-Fi systems.
It's a online service and you book it in advance.
Yes.
You pay for it.
Yes.
And they give you a PIN code or whatever. When you get there, you go to a depot where your gear is waiting for you.
That's right. That's out of season. If not, they have a shop upstairs from there.
In Reykjavik.
And right in the downtown. And they're a very good, very nice system. Very
what,
nice people
And what
use.
Company is that?
It's just called Camping Iceland.
Camping Iceland.
Yeah.
And what if you're going off into the countryside, you've got your car. Would most people then rent gear like that, or what would you advise? Do you normally end up with a tent and a sleeping bag, or do you stay in guest houses and on farms and then hike from there?
Sorry, I'm a hobbit. I'm happy to sleep in a truck or in a snow cave. But if you want some wodkons, you can take a tent. You can get air mattresses.
Sleep in a snow cave, unlike softies like me who prefer a tent. Okay.
But there's some amazing guest houses. There's the very good Association of Mountain Huts. Again, an honesty system. There'll be kitchens there. The door is open. Some of them are haunted because this is Iceland. And, you know, you always have the mysticism, the spiritual side. Others, they're part of an association in town. You'll book that in advance. They'll give you the key. You go along and you open it up and just maybe for
a group. I've thought about this, you know, a decade ago or whatever, they would have tens of thousands of visitors and now they have millions of visitors.
Yeah.
And what they've done, I've noticed, is every farm in the countryside, now they've got more tourists than cows in the barn. And
it's just more profitable, small
you know, dorms or whatever, or huts. And it's the honors system. It's sleek. It's minimal. It's plenty comfortable.
Yes.
And you're immersed in the wonder, the natural wonder of Iceland. Nicole, thanks for your call.
That's great. Thanks for the info.
You bet. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Jorik Harker. Jorik, describe for us the appeal for you to be in the middle of Iceland. What is it like to venture away from the people, away from the paved roads? What's the attraction? What's the reward?
I think it's the way that the elements change so quickly. I travel there so many times and people say, why are you taking photographs? I'm like, because it's different again today. The shapes. So when I first went, in my mind, I saw everything scientifically and not as a trained geologist by any means, but through the geology. And people would talk about the folklore and the spiritual side and I would be like, you're talking rubbish. It's ridiculous. After a while, you spend time out there. It doesn't get dark. The shadows change very slowly. The light changes. The lava has been eroded in such a way by the wind. You do start to see shapes. I know essentially how it was made by geology. But once you're standing there on your own and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and it's this twilight, this between dusk and the morning, you start to see those shapes and you're like, wait a minute, what did I just see there, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm not going down that avenue, but I'm afraid you will. It's a place that just gets inside of all groups that I take, of all ages. I think that's why I love it. It's just a really special place in that regard.
It just sweeps you away.
Yeah, and I'm torn, I really have to say. My job, our lives have been tourism. You know, we guide, we want people to go to a place. There's 2 million people there now. Everyone wants to, Iceland's the hot topic. So some of it hurts me, but some of it I think, well, the country is doing well. It's giving a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
Great for the economy. The thing that hurts me the most is the way that it's changing pollution-wise, ecologically, people that don't respect. Because Iceland, Scandinavians, they don't put up warning signs. So you don't see safety signs. You don't see safety ropes. If you do, it's maybe a short, just 6 inches off the ground. They're easy to step over. So I kind of, it hurts inside when I see the trash, the rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
I love the national parks of America. It's a huge draw for me, and I love how they're managed. I think Iceland has to catch up. It's learning lessons, you know, the management of simple things, toilets, toilet waste, trash, car parks, shops, you know, these great waterfalls.
I've noticed that in just the space of 5 years.
Yeah.
I went to the famous waterfalls five years ago, and they were just like, pull off the road, go there,
it's
all yours.
That's it.
Now there's a paid parking lot, there's a little restaurant,
there's
big crowds, there's ropes that keep people back, and...
And
every year, several tourists die.
Yeah.
They don't read the warning, and they do their selfie, and a gust of wind comes, and their history.
Yeah. So just in a nutshell, I would just say, love the place, enjoy it, but just respect it, and respect the people. I mean, imagine any other country that had 6 times their population visiting in a year.
Six times their population, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah,
300,000 people.
Imagine that many people to the States, to Yosemite.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Jorik Harker, and Jorik, Paige from Buffalo in Wyoming has just emailed us, and she says she'd like to have a little more active part of her 3-day layover in Iceland than rather than just seeing Reykjavik and going on a road trip. So, you know, a lot of people just have 2 or 3 days. They're going to see Reykjavik. They're going to go to one of the hot springs or something. But there is an option not to be, you know, fanatic like you living in an ice cave in the middle of Iceland, but just to venture away from the paved road and have an adventure, you'd probably end up paying somebody to take you on a four-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend for one unforgettable day to get really into nature?
Yep, it's possible.
With somebody who's a normal tourist and not an outdoor expert
like you. No, it's absolutely fine. And it's a country that lends itself very much to that. And I would also stress, you don't need to go to the Northwest Highlands. You don't need to go to the far northeast. Actually, one of my favorite areas, it's the Reynis Peninsula. So mm-hmm. you're going to land, if you're coming by plane, which most people are, you're going to land at Keflavik.
Right.
And that's on this far edge of the peninsula.
And the airport is on the peninsula. What's the name of the peninsula?
Reynis.
Reynis, so, okay. Yeah. And
so
it's like...
The smoky peninsula.
Okay, that means smoky in Icelandic, because driving around there, it's just like a lunar landscape of lava.
Yes. Around that area, it is a geothermal park, a UNESCO site, just 40 kilometers from the main city. So you can find lots of hotels between those two areas. And there's definitely companies who will go quad biking,
mm-hmm.
100,000 or so, almost 100,000 horses in Iceland. It's a massive part of their culture.
Three horses for every...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. No.
Yeah, it's almost one to three.
One to three.
So there's some great trekking on the peninsula, either through the lava fields or on the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Very good established companies. They will provide you again with the equipment. In fact, if you're into the horse riding, don't bring your own equipment. You're not allowed to use it. So there's some treks. And also, if you want to go by car, Arctic Trucks, a very big company there, they will modify, say, like Toyota Hiluxes, and they will take you just into the interior, which isn't too far to get to. You can go into the...
So these are the all-terrain vehicles that have those snorkels that go up.
Completely.
So on the front, you've got these snorkels going up so they can basically go through rivers and not have the engine drowned.
Correct. Most of the roads in the interior, they're gravel and there's very few bridges.
That in itself is quite an experience. That's the one day I had on the interior. That was wonderful. It's probably one country that merits, if you just are, you know, a lightweight coming in for a couple of days, to hire somebody who's got the gear, got the expertise,
definitely,
and give you that Icelandic experience.
I'm not going to deny it. It's a very expensive country, but I've always found the value is very good.
Uh-huh.
And they're very, very flexible. So if the weather is bad, if things are cancelled, they'll very often try and give you another time slot. They'll give you a voucher if you're going to come back. And if you want to go just a little further, go up to the Snæfells Peninsula. That's one of my favorites.
Snæfells Peninsula.
Yes.
York, it's been great talking to you. We're out of time. I'd like you just to take us to your most dramatic spot for my one moment to appreciate the natural, solitary wonder of Iceland. Where would I be? What would I experience?
Yeah. Hjulsvern, that's where he had the center of the earth. Just a big classic white lump, big volcano, ice on top, the wind. You're looking out at the ocean, nothing between you and Antarctica if you go in a straight line. Just the silence, the shapes, the birds, and just the spiritual feel to it.
I was going to almost go to that spiritual thing. It is kind of
spiritual.
I'm trying
to avoid it, aren't I?
I know. You're not a very spiritual guy, but you can't help it when you're in a spot like that.
I cannot.
It's a beautiful thing.
It totally is.
All right.
Gives me chills.
Jorik Harker, that's an inspiration. Thank you very much for joining us, and you got us thinking about Iceland.
Thanks so much.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Find out when other radio stations air Travel with Rick Steves. You can find a list of our affiliates at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.